Today's episode I was going to be releasing on 4th of July, but due to me not being able to breathe, whatever, felt like I was being choke slammed by the phenom and then given a last ride to where my lungs weren't operating the way that they needed to be. So I didn't fucking record it, but I did think that this episode of Daily Dumbass with Dipshit Dal about the Phenom, the Dead Man, the American Badass, the Undertaker. I thought 4th of July would be a great day to release it, but I wasn't up to it for the last week or so. Now I'm half-assed back, so here we go. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about the streak, the main WrestleMania, sorry, the biggest like winning streak in sports history, is The Undertaker. The streak, it was ended at 21-1 by Brock Lesnar, but we're not there yet. Today we're going to just talk about the streak and when it started, and I'm not going to go into the whole backstory of or into like the whole history of The Undertaker and everything. I'm just going to talk about these 21 matches. So there you go. It's going to be some wholehearted nerd talk about some wrestling. Wrestling's real! Get out of my face! But WrestleMania 7, just 4 months after making his professional wrestling debut at SummerSlam, the streak began. Mark the Undertaker Calloway had a streak that will never be repeated or duplicated in sports history. Anyone who's ever wanted to be a wrestler or thought about professional wrestling, or who's thought like they could give a whack at that and grew up watching it and everything. Any one of those dweebs, including myself, who says anything about wrestling, the opportunity to be able to face Undertaker in WrestleMania is almost a bigger opportunity for your career than winning the undisputed world championship. I don't even know if that's what it's called anymore. I've fallen off and I haven't watched it a lot as of late. YouTube, on the other hand, knows my shit and knows to tell me, like, hey, check out this shit from the early 2000s or the 90s. Even check out some of this stuff from the 80s when they're running around on Coke. But whatever. His streak went from 1991, shout out year I was born, to 2014, shout out to Obama still in office in 2014. I don't know, okay? I'm trying to come back. I haven't been doing this in a while, so brain's a little bit foggy. I didn't have the vid. I felt worse than I did when I had the vid. But the streak went from 1991 to 2014, ending at 21-0 whenever he lost to Brock Lesnar. Yada, yada, yada. The streak began in 1991 when The Undertaker fought against Superfly Jimmy Snuka, already a legend at the time, was beat by the Dead Man, who was in his Western Mortician phase from whenever he first came in. Superfly Jimmy Snuka was my papa's favorite wrestler. And Undertaker is one of my favorite wrestlers. So, going back and doing this little history on The Undertaker and watching his matches, and then I edited together a little video that'll go up on the YouTuber. His first match was only in WrestleMania, was only 4 months after entering in the scene. Now, he had been in a couple of the different wrestling territories and wrestling for different federations and stuff, but once he got into WWF, what it was known at the time, not World Wildlife Foundation, but once he got into WWF, he became very loyal to WWF and he stayed at WWF. A lot of these wrestlers will jump ship or switch it up during the gimmicks. Now, I'm not sure if Vince McMahon just continued paying the Dead Man exactly what it was that he wanted, or if Undertaker just enjoyed working with the McMahons that much. I don't think any other places were really going to take up the chance. I mean, the gimmick of the Undertaker was huge, so if he wanted to jump ship, it would have been really hard to change his whole persona and also to take Vince McMahon's baby away from the WWE or F, because long before Mark Calloway entered in as the dead mortician, that was a productional idea that Vince had had but never been able to bring it into intuition. He hadn't been able to actually create a superstar who would be able to sell it as well as what The Undertaker did. So, back to the Street. 21, or his first match was Superfly Jimmy Snuka. 1991, year I was born. 1992, he battled against Jake the Snake Roberts. So his first two ones, I mean, those people are bona fide wrestling legends, Superfly and Jake the Snake. Jake the Snake, there's a very interesting documentary if you want to watch that on him. If you have Amazon Prime, they have a interesting documentary about him trying to clean up and everything. And then I had seen parts of the documentary on the DDP Relentless one that is also up on Amazon Prime. But Jake the Snake had quite a bit of demons, and he eventually ended up conquering those demons. But one demon that did end up beating him was the dead man from Death Valley. And so his first two, he won with the moves of a tombstone piledriver. And I might just throw this video or this audio over the video that I have where I'm going over all his different matches and stuff. Just because I like to do shit, okay? Not saying anything's good, but thanks for watching. I appreciate you. His third match in 1993 was against Giant Gonzalez. Now, Giant Gonzalez was basically just a gimmick that they brought into the mix. That way, Undertaker would have someone really, really big to fight against. And Giant Gonzalez's bodysuit was like of a Neanderthal. It was a bodysuit that showed, like his buttocks, and it showed like, picture like you're at a family vacation on the beach, and there's those little cutouts where you could put your face inside the thing, and it's got like the muscly guy or whatever. Basically, that's what they had him wearing, a suit of that. Well, in this match, the Giant Gonzalez decided that he was going to try and chloroform the dead man, and he ended up winning by, or the dead man ended up winning by disqualification. Because you can't chloroform someone who's dead. All right, so that was in 1993. 1994, there was no Undertaker wasn't there. Now, throughout the time of his career, he ended up having to take off certain times, as wrestlers do. Sometimes the gimmick is that they end up dying or that they're badly hurt. A lot of time with Undertaker, it's like he's buried alive and then he's going to be brought right back, or brought back in enough time for WrestleMania. A lot of the time, it's that way they could heal from injuries, deal with personal stuff, maybe just take a vacation. But in 1995, he fought King Kong Bundy. Maybe I got this one wrong. On my notes here, it says that he won by disqualification against King Kong Bundy, but I think it was disqualification against Giant Gonzalez, because I have clips on here of him trying to, I don't know, now it's me seconding myself on what kind of research I was doing while I was sick. 1995 was King Kong Bundy. Big fucker who Undertaker ended up beating. 1996 was Diesel. Diesel was probably one of the first ones that Undertaker fought that was actually, if you don't know who Diesel is, he then moved on to WCW as Kevin Nash and was one of the founders of the NWO, New World Order. Kevin Nash was also the one who ended up beating Goldberg Streak, which the Goldberg Streak, I'll have to do a whole episode on that one alone because Goldberg came to WCW and just fucked everyone up. But that's neither here nor there. 1996 was whenever Diesel fell victim to the streak. 1997, Psycho Sid was the next one to fall into the streak. 1998. I remember watching WrestleMania in 1998 where Undertaker fought against Kane. And that's whenever Undertaker had his Ministry of Darkness phase going on, I believe. Wrestling fans, go ahead, yell at me in the comments if I'm wrong about this. It don't matter. I mean, whatever. But 1998 was whenever he had fought Kane inside WrestleMania. And up until this point, most of his competitors that they've had for him in WrestleMania have been really, really big in size and everything like that. Just basically making it a showcase of giants at WrestleMania. And up until this point, he still has won all of his WrestleMania matches, but they're not actually acknowledging that yet. They don't actually acknowledge that he's got a streak going on at WrestleMania until I think after he hits 10 of them. And that was during his American Badass Dead Man Biker phase. So 1999 was a Hell in a Cell match against the Big Boss Man, and at the end of that he ended up lynching the Big Boss Man and letting the Hell in a Cell hoist the Big Boss Man up into the heavens above after lynching him. 2001 was Ric Flair. Ric Flair, that's after the whole WCW WWF merger had happened, and Ric Flair comes out. And I'm gonna be honest, once Ric Flair had gotten into the WWF or WWE, whatever it was known by at the time, I wasn't too big into him. I had felt like he had run his game, and it's just kind of like now whenever you see Hulk Hogan coming out with the 12-inch pythons because the 24-inch pythons have hibernated, and now Hulkster isn't on the TRT or anything, so his arms are a tad bit smaller. And the pythons aren't working like they used to, brother. I don't know what Hulk Hogan did to God, but he took away his pythons. So, and that's whenever he was fighting Ric Flair. And, you know, Ric Flair, woo! He's a great, great wrestler. He's a legend. I enjoyed watching him in WCW. But I did feel like they keep on letting these guys go way past their prime to where I don't need to see DX in their 50s out there telling the world to suck it. It was so much cooler whenever I was 8 years old and those guys were however old and I was learning to tell the world suck it. But I don't need to see dudes in their 50s acting like they are being the rebellious teenagers who are saying suck it, you know what I mean? But that was in 2002 when he fought Ric Flair. 2003 was the Big Show and A Train, and that became a handicap match whenever Undertaker's partner ended up falling out of the thing. And that was the only time where the Undertaker was slated to actually have a tag team match at WrestleMania. And then it ended up becoming a handicap match because they pulled his partner from the gimmick, or his partner got hurt. I don't remember exactly how that happened. But he took on Big Show and A-Train. In 2004, he faced off again against Kane. And in 2004, I believe that was WrestleMania 20. Yeah, because that would be the last time that he faced Kane at WrestleMania. He ended up facing off against Kane at WrestleMania 20, and that's whenever he had came back as the Phenom, I believe. Now, again, wrestling fans, I'm probably wrong on a lot of this shit, okay? I'm not a fucking historian. Get off my nuts. After the 2004 battle against Kane, where, no shock, he won there again, the next l one that he had to fight in 2005 was Randy Orton. Now, at the time, Randy Orton was on a bit of a legend killing spree. Every week, whenever Randy Orton had started up. I don't know. But one of my first memories of Randy Orton in wrestling is whenever he was going through and just fucking RKOing any and all legends that would come back through. It was almost like WWE was like, "Hey, we got this new guy. His family's been in this shit for a while. Let's bring back some legends." And each time when they're giving like a heartfelt speech or anything like that, let's just let them get fucking RKO'd. And that's what happened a lot. So whenever it was the Randy Orton battle against The Undertaker, I believe the streak had already been brought up at that point. It had been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, he had won 11 already at this point. So at this point, they've already, like, said something about the streak. And they've said that he hasn't been beat there. So Randy Orton's like, "I'm the one who's going to kill the legend. I'm the one who'll take out the dead man at WrestleMania." This is when it all kind of starts becoming like a bigger gimmick than I don't know if what they planned or if their stuff was finally coming to fruition. But people had thought that Randy Orton was going to beat him. I had, while doing research on this, looked up some videos, and there was five superstars who they said actually refused to break the thing. They said that they weren't actually asked, but like word had been going around or whatever. And Randy Orton was one of the ones who said that he didn't want to end the streak. It's kind of like it had to throw on some more mysterious onto either himself or kind of make him have like more of a battle because he's taking out legend after legend after legend after legend, and then he challenges Undertaker to WrestleMania, and it's like he's taking out every legend on every Monday Night Raw segment possible, and it was like he was gonna just add Undertaker to that list, and that didn't happen. And I believe around this time is whenever Undertaker started saying, "If you fight me, I'll make you famous," was one of his lines that he would say. And, you know, Randy Orton's one of the biggest ones going now. And Undertaker wasn't wrong. He had a very keen instinct on fighting people and making them become famous. But, like, a lot of people, like the remainder of this list, they were already all, like, pretty famous. So they didn't need that match with The Undertaker. It was just kind of matching it up on how they wanted to make it go down. Okay, so that was Randy Orton. In 2006, he faced off against the world's strongest man, Mark Henry. And I done fucked up because where's Yokozuna? He fought Yokozuna. Motherfucker. He had fought Yokozuna as well at WrestleMania in a casket match earlier. Sorry, guys. I know that that's in my video that I clipped together. But yeah, I just had a brain fart on that one. 2006, he had fought against Mark Henry. And it was the world's strongest man against the dead man. And Undertaker ended up winning that match. 2007, he fought against Drax Batista. And Batista had a great run in the WWE. It seemed like it was kind of short, but I kind of fell off of watching it at that time. But Batista came in, and him and Randy Orton was part of, was it the Four Horsemen? No, it wasn't the fucking Four Horsemen. I don't know, him, Randy Orton, Ric Flair, I think Triple H. They had, the League of Douches is kind of what it was. But yeah, in 2007, he ended up fighting against Batista. I believe that in that thing I watched, they said that Batista was also another one who said that he didn't want to end the streak. Don't quote me on that, but who knows? That might be how it had went. 2008, he fought against Edge. Now, also, Edge was one of the ones who had said beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania wouldn't really do anything to his career due to the fact that Edge, at this time, had already broken away from Edge and Christian. Edge was hooking up, shacking up with Eddie Guerrero's widow, Vicky Guerrero, and you know, this is obviously after Eddie Guerrero had passed. But Edge and Undertaker started spewing and everything like that. Undertaker chokeslammed Edge all the way down to hell off of a ladder, which is a cool match. And but Edge had said in that one video that I watched that he was already the R-rated superstar. He had already won multiple of the heavyweight championship belts. That at that point it wouldn't do anything to his career to really like it wouldn't really do anything for him to beat the Undertaker. Now, people would think that if someone's going to beat the Undertaker, it should be like an up-and-coming person or something like that. But it wasn't. So then in 2009, Undertaker fought against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. And Shawn Michaels made a return. He descended from the rafters wearing all white as a born-again Christian. This is after he's cleaned up and everything like that, and he's saying that he's gonna be the one to end the streak. Well, the streak doesn't end there. And then for the whole next year, Shawn Michaels is this born-again Christian who's running around with these demons in his head because he's lost to The Undertaker. And then it becomes a whole thing to where he ends up calling out Undertaker and saying that he's gonna officially end the streak and that he's gonna get revenge for the last year. And then Undertaker tells him, "That's fine, I'll put up the streak. You're gonna put up your career." So in 2010, the match was Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, and it was the streak versus the career match. And a little bit of wrestling side talk, since both these people are on the list, it's why not mention it? Back whenever Ric Flair had to retire, the match that made him retire is Ric Flair was fighting Shawn Michaels. And whenever Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels fought, it was a really, if you're, a real big fan of wrestling, you're gonna know what I'm talking about. But there's a part in Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair match where, Shawn Michaels is about to deliver Sweet Chin Music to Ric Flair. Shawn Michaels is basically crying, and he tells Ric Flair as he gets up, he's like, "I'm sorry, I love you." Boom, Sweet Chin Music to the face. Whenever I was watching it, I felt kind of like a similar thing when I watched the last Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker match. There's a part whenever Shawn Michaels, I believe he kicks out of something that I think he kicked out of a tombstone at WrestleMania, which wasn't all that common to happen. Someone had kicked out of it. That's a joke that happened quite often. But he had basically kicked out of it, and then Undertaker's standing there waiting, and Shawn Michaels is crawling up to him, and then Shawn Michaels, like, while on his knees, not even really able to get up, is looking up at Undertaker and gives the slit your throat motion. Now, to me, I felt like that was Shawn Michaels, like, knowing, like, this is it for me, this is over. Obviously, I know that they already know how the matches are going to go, but I feel like this was Shawn Michaels like telling Undertaker, send me out like a man, send me out like a legend, like give me a farewell." And then Undertaker actually on this tombstone piledriver that he did to Shawn Michaels to finish off Shawn Michaels' career, like all the rest, he just kind of gets them up into position and then like plops down. On this one, like you see, like this anger hit his eyes after Shawn Michaels gave Undertaker his own little slogan, and Undertaker gets this crazy look in his eyes, and he fucking grabs Shawn Michaels, picks him up, and the tombstone that he does is, and at this point, Undertaker's knees have all been beat up and hips are all fucked and everything. He had Shawn Michaels up, and instead of just like plopping him down and giving him that, he actually jumped up into the air. Like both feet off the ground, and then tombstone piledrived Shawn Michaels. And if you're gonna be taken out, like if you're putting your career up on the line, you don't want it to be just like a simple finishing move and it's done. Like, you want the person delivering that move to you to fucking sell it. And, you know, you want your career to end on as high of a note as you can. So that was what was pretty cool about that one. Then come around 2011, Undertaker and Triple H are now feuding, and Triple H decides that he's going to be the one to take on the streak, and he ends up losing the first match in 2011. 2012, Triple H is fighting Undertaker again, but this time Shawn Michaels is going to be the special guest referee, and that one was marked the end of the era. And on the end of the era one, it could have ended very, very well, and like they could have just called the streak right then at 20-0. Undertaker took out Triple H in a Hell in a Cell match. Shawn Michaels had to actually be the one to count 1, 2, 3 for Triple H to lose against The Undertaker. And in a great showmanship of respect for each other and for the careers that they've each had and the organization that they're in, all three of the men helped each other out of the ring. Undertaker and Shawn Michaels helped carry Triple H out of the ring, and then they both turn around and are staring downward at the ring, like kind of knowing that the Attitude Era was done, and that, you know, that these legends have already done their thing. They could have ended the streak there, and it would have been cool. The 21-0 became 21-0 after he beat CM Punk at WrestleMania. Now, I wasn't even watching wrestling at this time, but I can tell you from what I had seen from him, the dude just annoyed the shit out of me. CM Punk, I get it. He was really popular with the kids, and it was a different era of wrestling at the time, but just CM Punk in general just kind of rubbed me the wrong way and irritated me a bit. But that's it. That's what I had to say about that. I wanted to talk about the streak and the fact that it was a streak that won't ever be able to be duplicated again. They won't have another wrestler that's able to come in and win 21-0. But I think that it could have just ended at 20-0, and no one would have had any problems with that. But of course, all good things have to come to an end, and it came to an end for The Undertaker whenever he faced off against Brock Lesnar. So he faced off against Brock Lesnar, and now the streak ended to being 21-1. And since then, he's fought other matches at WrestleMania, and it just to me, it doesn't have the same feel to it as if the other matches did. But that's been my episode on The Undertaker. I'm not a professional researcher. I'm not a professional anything. I'm just the dipshit who likes doing these fun little things when I get a chance to. So that's all I got to say about that. Dipshit Dale, this daily dumbass. Deuces.